We got to a hotel and he put down some routine why he should go in first, alone. I pulled some bills out of my pocket. He looked at them and said, "Better give me the 10. I gave it to him. He went in the hotel and came right out. "No rooms there," he said. "We'll try the Savoy." The Savoy was right across the street. "Wait here," he said. I waited about an hour, and by then it occurred to me what was wrong with the first hotel. It had had no back or side door he could walk out of. I went back to my apartment and got my gun. I waited around the Savoy and looked for the kid all through the French Quarter. About noon, I got hungry and ate a plate of oysters with a glass of beer, and suddenly felt so tired that when I walked out of the restaurant, my legs were folding under me as if someone was clipping me behind the knees. I took a cab home and fell across the bed without taking off my shoes. I woke up around 6 in the evening and went to Frank's. After 3 quick beers, I felt better. There was a man standing by the jukebox, and I caught his eye several times. He looked at me with a special recognition, like one queer looks at another. He looked like one of those terracotta heads you plant grass in. A peasant face, with peasant intuition, stupidity, shrewdness, and malice. He couldn't have been anything but Irish. The jukebox wasn't working. I walked over and asked him what was wrong with it. He said he didn't know. I asked him to have a drink, and he ordered Coke. He told me his name was Pat. I told him I had come up recently from the Mexican border. He said, "I'd like to get down that way, me. Bring some stuff in from Mexico." "The border is pretty hot," I said. "I hope you won't take offense at what I say," he began. "But you look like you use stuff yourself." "Sure I use. Do you want to score?" he asked. "I'm due to score in a few minutes. I've been trying to hustle the dough. If you buy me a cap, I can score for you." I said, "Okay." We walked around the corner past the NMU hall. "Wait here a minute," he said, disappearing into a bar. I half expected to get beat for my $4, but he was back in a few minutes. "Okay," he said. "I got it." I asked him to come back to my apartment to take a shot. We went back to my room, and I got out my outfit that hadn't been used in 5 months. "If you don't have a habit, you better go slow with this stuff," he cautioned me. "It's pretty strong." I measured out about 2/3 of a cap. "Half is plenty," he said. "I tell you it's strong." "This'll be all right," I said. But as soon as I took the needle out of the vein, I knew it wasn't all right. I felt a soft blow in the heart. Pat's face began to get black around the edges, the blackness spreading to cover his face as though it were actually changing color. I could feel my eyes roll back in their sockets. I came to several hours later. Pat was gone. I was lying on the bed with my collar loosened. I stood up and fell to my knees. I was dizzy and my head ached. $10 were missing from my watch pocket. I guess he figured I wasn't going to need it anymore. Several days later, I met Pat in the same bar. "Holy Jesus," he said. "I thought you was dying. I loosened your collar and rubbed ice on your neck. You turned all blue. So I says, 'Holy Jesus, this man is dying. I'm going to get out of here, me.'" A week later, I was hooked. I asked Pat about the possibilities of pushing in New Orleans. "This town is et up with pigeons," he said. "It's really tough."